This is Seismic Sessions, enabling the financial services industry, a podcast show dedicated to two things, revenue enablement and the financial services sector. Join us as we feature experts and leaders across the financial services industry who discuss innovative and impactful ways to sell, market and deliver memorable client experiences through enablement. Let's get this Seismic Session started. Hello and welcome to Seismic Sessions podcast. Very much looking forward to today. We are joined, as always, by my co-host, Rachel Rowe. Good to have you here again, Rachel.
Hi, Gemma. Lovely to be here. I agree with you. I think we're going to have a really good discussion today.
Awesome. And we're also joined by Nikki Orrett, HR Director at ICBC Standard Bank. Hi, Nikki.
Hi, Gemma. Hi, Rachel. Lovely to be here.
Thanks for coming along. And lastly, but not leastly, we have Monica Stankiw, Senior Diversity, Inclusion and Wellbeing Manager at Lloyds. Hi, Monica.
Hi, lovely to be here. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming along. And as I say, I'm very much looking forward to today's topic. Today, we're going to be looking at the evolution of learning and coaching in financial services, which I think we can all agree has come a long way. Maybe it's just me saying it's a long way because I've been in the industry for long enough to remember how it used to be. But we're about to get into that in a bit more detail. So our regular listeners will know that we keep the structure of our podcast in the theme of our earthquakes. So we go back to the beginning and look at the tremors, first of all, of where movements of change began. Then we come to the epicenter of where we're at now. And then we're going to go into the really nice part of the aftershocks of where we think things are going to move in the future. And I always like that section of making your predictions. So let's get started. Let's look back at the tremors. So anyone else been in the industry as long as I have? If I look back 20 odd years, you know, I can remember a time when things such as onboarding and learning and coaching used to be really set and in person and to a rigid plan. And while that was all very good when I was, you know, in my early 20s and able to be in the office every day, that's not always been the case for everybody in every situation. So while it did have its benefits, there were also definitely things that needed to change, which is what we've seen happen. If I can go first of all to Nikki, how did you see things in terms of learning and coaching and onboarding when you began your career?
Well, Gemma, I think I'm even a tad older than you are, but I certainly remember lots of classroom-based learning, graduate programs that were all about meeting potential candidates through many, many face-to-face interviews, and then making offers and candidates joining the organization and spending a week in a boot camp type training environment in a hotel somewhere and listening to module after module of members of the organization coming in and delivering face-to-face learning. And while things have changed so much since then.
Yeah, and it's interesting, isn't it? Because everybody always goes back to that first piece of onboarding. Did you have any experience in terms of learning and coaching ongoing at that period? I know I had some, but again, it was very rigid and in person and not necessarily flexible in any way.
That's exactly right. It wasn't. It was literally, you know, leverage files of paper to go through. Even the learning method, I think, in those days was fairly traditional and certainly, yes, face-to-face.
It's really interesting, Nikki, what you've just pulled out there. So I don't want to give my age away either, but I think that we've probably had similar kinds of experiences. And I remember going on a graduate, I started in an investment bank and I went into the graduate trainee program and we were actually 3 months in a kind of classroom environment. It was a fantastic program, but it must have cost an absolute fortune. And it was all delivered in one style. So if you're, I guess, I didn't think about it then, but knowing what I know now, if your learning style was different, there was no accommodation for that. You know, everything was delivered in one way. And it was a very kind of, you talked about it being linear, Gemma, it was a very linear kind of experience. And I think it was more a case of, you know, we've got these new folks, we're just going to throw everything at them. And then after that, then we finished the training and that's it. And so it wasn't kind of a continuous journey. It was a one and done kind of approach.
Exactly that. And I think that was a part that I look back on as a missing piece, although I didn't recognize this at the time, to your point, Rachel, is that continuous learning piece. you know, you're expected to onboard and learn everything in that first part, but there wasn't that continuation plan always in place. Monica, what about yourself? What was your experience like when you first came into the industry?
Well, when I first started working, I do agree that it felt that the learning offer was quite limited in a lot of organization content-wise. The formal learning tended to be off the shelf, quite generic, not really adapted to the specific needs of the individual. I think in general, training tended to be focused more on leaders rather than the general population and developing them to deliver business results. And when I think about coaching, it used to be quite limited, formal, usually reserved for leaders, and it was usually offered when there was some sort of issue. So I think it had a bit of a negative connotation in the past, if you had to go through coaching. But now it's more widely available at all levels of the organization. It's more informal. So if I think about Lloyd's, for instance, I went through a 6-month line management program, which was fantastic. And as part of that, one of the modules was focused on coaching and encouraging all line managers to learn the basics of coaching and have a coaching approach to management, which I think it shows progress and it shows that now organizations are encouraging leaders to have a much more democratic approach to how they do things.
There's an interesting adage, isn't there, that, you know, what if we train our people and they leave? And the reverse of that being, you know, what if we don't train them and they stay? And I think that felt like the attitude that I was coming into early on in my career as far as training and development was concerned.
Yeah, and I like the fact you brought up there, you know, that coaching has had its negative connotations over the years. And you're completely right there, Monica. I remember a time where if you were needing coaching for missing something in your career, it was seen as a negative. You know, why did you not already have that string to your bow? And I think that's something that we've really moved away from when you look at how things are now in terms of employees wanting more from their employers, in terms of what are you going to teach me while I'm here with you? And that's been a real movement. And I think that's a really good thing to bring up in this tremors part. So maybe if we now segue to the epicenter and start talking about how people do expect more from roles and how learning and coaching post-COVID has actually become a huge part of this as people start to want more from a package. Nikki, what have you seen in your HR role in terms of that, of what people expect when they're looking for their next job?
It's really interesting conversation from so many different angles. When we talk about what people are looking for, it's hard not to acknowledge the multi-generational workforce we have at the moment. And I actually think what leaders and people and culture professionals have had to think about is how do we deliver across an employee life cycle to a range of different needs. But one thing is constant is that employees definitely want something new from work. We're moving much more from a loyalty, job for life type contract to what was more about engagement and then thriving really in organizations. And increasingly looking forward, people are looking for more connection, they're looking for more choice, and they're looking to come to organizations as contributors, as opposed to just takers. Certainly are growing their careers in a very different way. And so just purely from the people development perspective and the life cycle perspective, we're having to be much more creative around how we are relevant to people. And certainly the learning and the coaching agenda is very linked to that. Much more personalized learning journeys for people, this opportunity for them to lean in to different aspects of their role, to develop different skills. The fact that skills are really the real currency in work at the moment, as opposed to broader roles. And definitely just the opportunity to, the coaching point made earlier is so true for me, from remediation to something that's much more mutually beneficial, whether it's reverse coaching and mentoring programs, we talk about those as well a lot. And how do we sort of develop that mutual benefit and relationship in an organization?
I love the idea of looking at that mutual beneficial side as well, where you're working together. And I think there's been a rise of people going for roles that they don't fill 100% of, but they fill, you know, 80 or 90% of, with the company filling that other 10 to 20% with that learning and coaching aspect. And not that I'd ever recommend anyone to listen to any podcast other than this one, but I was listening to a high performance podcast with Richard Branson recently, and he made a point of saying that he always employs people that aren't quite 100% at that role, gives them the learning and coaching to achieve 100% in that role. And then he gains that loyalty from them as well, because he's, you know, given them that mutual respect and that mutual learning, and they get then give that loyalty back, which I think is a really interesting method and approach as well. Monica, what about yourself? What have you seen in terms of that?
So I would say that technological advances have really allowed people to access e-learning from everywhere. And going back to that idea of, you know, the five generations being in the workplace and people having different needs and different ways that they want to consume information, I think we are seeing now more on-demand e-learning, micro-learning as well. People want to be able to, you know, do a quick course on maybe diversity and inclusion or well-being or something directly related to their work on their way to the office or when they're going back home. Well, I think we're seeing that flexible, I guess, e-learning that we have available now. I would also say that there is a bigger emphasis on accessibility. Organizations are much more proactive now about making sure that whatever e-learning they use, that has been tested for accessibility. And we are also, learning has become much more accessible in general or more democratic in the sense that you have a lot of free podcasts, webinars, YouTube videos, TikTok accounts. So people can use those resources to upskill and reskill themselves. So they don't always need to just rely on their employer to give them access to information. And we are also seeing employers pushing different types of learning. So it's not just about formal learning, degrees, diplomas, but also mentoring, reverse mentoring, shadowing someone, coaching, rotation programs. And so I think we have a much more holistic, I guess, approach to learning now.
So I think it's really interesting because I think what we've seen is a real dynamic taking place. And I think it's been catalyzed by technology, but folks have much more choice. So employees have much more choice over their careers, the direction of their career. You know, if they want to shift career partway through, they have that flexibility. And similarly, customers, clients also have more choice. And so I think this growing awareness of the employee journey and the client journey in parallel have really shifted the emphasis on how learning can enable the individual to excel much more effectively in their role, but how also it can deliver a stronger and more engaging client experience to have folks who, you know, understand their customers, understand their pain, and understand their role to support that customer journey. And I think it's really interesting just hearing from one of our clients recently who talked about the fact that, you know, he would really like to see the opportunity further on in people's careers to maybe introduce a flexible learning system that would facilitate maybe a change in career path or a change in direction. So thinking a little bit about the corporate athlete, if you like, and how we could perhaps include that later on in an individual's career, so that gives them more choice. They don't necessarily continue along the path which they've kind of developed expertise. And I think that's a really interesting idea, given that we've got these five generations in the workplace now and a real need to kind of serve the needs for each of those different demographic groups.
Yeah, and I think there's also that point that Monica made a moment ago of where we need to pass the information along from generation to generation. You know, we've got a whole generation of baby boomers that are working that bit longer, but before they do leave, we need to ensure that they impart their knowledge to the younger generations in the workforce. And how do we do that? But while they are working longer, is there some reverse mentoring that can happen there as well? So Nikki, can you tell us if you have any stories about that?
I do. I mentioned earlier this fact that we're delivering to such a full spectrum, but we're spending a lot of time focusing on new generations and their coveted digital skills. It's quite interesting because I'm finding our newer entrants and junior talent coming into the organization with digital skills, but not necessarily the traditional business skills that are still quite core to an organization. So there are still learning needs, even if you're digitally enabled. But we also recognize that the population is aging fast. Older workers will represent a much more significant aspect of the workforce. And we as organizations need to adapt for this spectrum and think about the sort of requirements. I've mentioned the employee life cycle a couple of times, but I think that's one way to be very inclusive across multiple generations is thinking about key stages in people's lives, what they may need, and leaning into those requirements from a career life benefits, intrinsic and extrinsic reward perspective. So I think the employee deal has evolved against the backdrop of, yes, technology as an enabler, yes, a very different post-COVID environment, but also where we're seeing a lot more empathy and purpose-lived and purpose-led organizations. We haven't mentioned the context of ESG in the world of work as well, and that's also just affecting how people come into the environment and, as I say, what they're looking for in a job. Mm-hmm. But career pivoting is definitely enabled by the ability to, as Monica mentioned earlier, to learn on demand, to build your skills and not think about your role in the more traditional linear way as a ladder. The squiggly career concept, if organizations, in other words, are able to facilitate internal career development in different ways, to allow job exposure to different aspects of an organization, to enable people to do short-term assignments, to try different things, to learn different skills.
And I think that continuous learning then leads to retention, does it not?
Very much so. I mean, we're also accepting that 54% of young professionals, they say, are, you know, express a desire for a portfolio career, far more than the traditional linear career that we're used to. And yet we will have other aspects of the organization who would rather reinvent themselves in an organization than necessarily move externally to do that.
I think that's a really interesting point as well, because as we see retention rates, or we're starting to see retention rates really falling, at the same time, if onboarding time is too long, we suddenly have a really big gap organizationally that I think learning and coaching can step in and fill if it's done in the right way.
Yeah, I think there's a real need for a seamless way to give your team what they need and whenever they need it now, as we become a world that's much more used to having things at a touch of a button with technical digitalization. Monica, what do you see that is helping with retention on your side when it comes to that tech side?
I think it's very much about making sure that you connect your learning offer to what's actually relevant to your employees and to what your organization needs. So you respond to that feedback. It's about making sure that your learning offer is flexible, it's strategic, you think ahead about what the needs of the organization will be in the next few years, and you're proactive about making sure that people know what's available and what they will need to develop in the future. I think it's also important to connect your learning offer to your development plans that colleagues have. So, you know, as part of your objective settings, you can make sure that each employee has a development plan put in place that can focus on developing them in their current role, but also thinking ahead, and then seeing what's the offer that your organization has and connect that.
Yeah, exactly. And I'd say in my own career, I've seen a real sort of pivot from training to coaching. And I know, you know, they're two words that sometimes mean the same thing. But what I mean by that is, you know, when I started off in this industry, it was more about equipping me with what I needed to do my job then and there. So going back to that grad scheme that you mentioned at the beginning, Nikki, whereas now I find it's more individual, as to your point, Monica, you know, what coaching do I as an individual need to step up to the next level? And I've got to say, you know, my own career has been very squiggly, especially being a parent. I've gone always for a role that fits around my current lifestyle. And I see that happening a lot more in the industry since COVID, and people wanting that individual coaching to help them get to the next stage of what they want to get to. And I guess here is a good point for us to start looking into the future. You know, we've already noticed at the epicenter that it's the first time in history that we have 5 generations in the workforce and how do we navigate that? But as we look into the future, what are your predictions of how the workplace will look? What do you think that we're doing right at the moment that will we carry on into the future? And what do you think is going to just be pushed to the side, like when we looked at the Tremors and we thought of that, you know, rigid in-person training? What do you think will become that for the future? So, Nikki, if I can go to you first.
Yeah, thanks, Gemma. I really firmly believe that if we don't keep humans at the heart of the world of work, we're not going to optimize tech that we have, in essence. And I think sort of unlocking human-centric productivity, but against a digital background, I mean, it sounds, you know, it's not a simple thing, but it's absolutely critical in, I think, shaping the future of work for people. I'm sure we've all heard the recent term is that we won't lose jobs to AI, but people without AI will lose jobs to people with AI. And that's the way people are starting to think about the digital environment and cultivating a digital first culture to make sure that we are actually optimizing the tech that we see coming into the workplace. And practically for people, though, an organization is still going to need to feel like a place of trust and a place of equity. And I think that's something that we are starting to see much more in the context of our social responsibilities and appreciating that purpose, mission, and values in an organization and a connection between individual purpose and values and an organizational commitment and the employee deal are so key. And that if there's alignment there, that we will see the retention rates, that's optimal retention rates to enable an organization. So I think climates of trust, fair pay, fair equity, inclusion are all cultures that we're trying to cultivate right now. And I think we're actually seeing that shift in organizations in a really positive way.
I like what you say there about, and I have heard it before, that it's not AI taking over people's roles, but people who don't keep up with AI may lose their roles. Who do you think that sits with as we're talking about learning and coaching? Is it the individuals? Is it their responsibility to go out and find out about AI and train themselves? Or do you see it as the employers?
Oh, that is such a great question, because I think environments that facilitate that development naturally and through learner-led solutions, so i.e. training solutions that are learner-led, and some of the points Monica made earlier around being accessible just in time and that people can connect to in a flexible, proactive way. I think those environments will, I think learners have to make the most of the opportunities they're given. But it practically in my day job, we're much more challenged about prioritizing investment, technology enablement, to deliver more digital environments to our people, particularly where they, you know, knowing that that's what they will value over time. So as work is an extension more broadly of our lives, it's a core component of what we do, whether we do it in a hybrid way, we work from home, whether we're working in the office, it's got to be something that enables our growth, because that's what people are looking for. They're looking for growth. They're looking for an organization where they can do something that they're good at, that they love, means something to them.
Yeah. And I think there's a real danger if companies don't train their staff in AI, as we all, you know, work in a regulated environment, that people may go off and use AI secretly. And that's where some issues can happen, you know, if they're throwing sensitive data into ChatGPT. So I think there is a real need for us to set the standards, if you like, as employers, if that makes sense.
Absolutely right. And we're spending far more time looking at privacy issues, legal and compliance risks, etc., than necessarily the investments in test cases and tools.
Yeah. And I think there's a barrier there that we need to break down, which is it's okay to use AI to enable you in your role. You know, it's not, I think there was a time where people, you know, didn't want to admit that they had used AI to create something that was then fabulous. Monica, how do you see that in terms of generations as we move forward? Do you think that there'll be a different response from each generation when it comes to AI?
Well, as we were talking earlier, the older generations will have to work longer. So we live longer. That means we will retire later on in life. So I think we have to be very careful about not leaving anyone behind when it comes to AI training and AI education. In general, we tend to focus on upskilling younger people. But given that we will continue to have five generations in the workplace, it's really important that we are mindful about giving everyone access to this level of learning, so no one is left behind. We're also seeing the younger generation coming in, and they have very different expectations from the workplace. They're much more tech savvy. They've never knew a world where there was no math access to the internet, right, or social media. So they're very comfortable with technology. But at the same time, I think a lot of people and across generations tend to be a bit wary about the possibility of AI and bias being built in AI. So I guess, yeah, it's a new area that organizations should be mindful of in terms of the products they use and they choose to help them solve some of their problems.
Yeah, and I know that you've seen some issues with previous tech that's been introduced with it not being inclusive enough. Could you give us an example of, things that we do need to be wary of based on your experience of what you've seen?
Yeah, so there is a famous case now of facial recognition softwares that are used a lot in security at airports, for instance, that are not very good at recognizing people that have darker skin tones. There are also cases where those facial recognition programs wrongly identified Black men in the U.S. for committing certain crimes, and people were arrested because of how this technology was used. And in the end, it was okay. They were released. But still, I imagine it's quite a traumatic experience to be arrested and then knowing what's going on and why you've been arrested. So I think, yeah, that's a really good example that shows how AI sometimes can go wrong.
Yeah, so and that's back to the point that we've all made, that there always needs that human element to it. So it's more, you know, as a technology to enable us rather than to take over processes. We still need that human element to keep it safe and add that part. Rachel, how do you see the future of all of this looking?
Yes, I think that AI, as we've already discussed, has a really important role to play in this. And I think that will catalyze the personalization of coaching and training, because I think it will give a lot more capability to have an understanding at an individual level, you know, of where the challenges are, what support is needed, and then be able to provide that in the moment. So I see this kind of coaching emphasis becoming much more front and center for organizations. I think particularly in FS, if we look at the world in which we live, you know, there's a huge complexity around markets, products, new services, compliance. I mean, the list goes on in terms of what go-to-market teams need to be aware of. And I think being able to provide those in the moment learnings, and they could be through different formats. And we've talked about the kind of the rigidity originally in the way that training and coaching was delivered. There's an opportunity now that this could be peer driven. It could be through video. It could be through various different mediums, depending on what engages that individual most effectively. So I think we're at a really exciting moment that we can really provide that performance enhancement in bite-sized pieces in the moment as a continuous part of that employee journey. And I think that's both incredibly productive for the organization, but I think also inspiring and very gratifying at an individual level to have that focus and investment in your individual career within an organization. So I think it's exciting times as far as learning and coaching is concerned.
I completely agree with what you said there, Rachel. It's really exciting, and it's exciting to see it at that individual level. And I'd predict in the future there'll be more feedback when it comes to learning and coaching, because it's one thing to impart information on someone, which is, I think, how we look back at the Tremors. You know, you just get imparted information to start your role. And then it came to this coaching element of where, you know, it's individual and how can you be better? And I see that next stage in terms of the aftershocks as really being feedback of how did you do? How can you be better on an individual level? Anyone got any last predictions that they would like to share or impart at this stage?
I'm actually thinking about something you've just said, Gemma, and how interesting you talk about feedback. And I wonder whether we will be more open to feedback from a digital tool, that we're more open to digital feedback loops too.
I think because it's less personal.
It's less personal. That's right. What a cool way to think about the what we'll get out of the these different channels in the future. There are some great digital coaching solutions out there. Yeah, I think it's kind of really interesting, despite what I've just said about human centricity, taking feedback from a channel that's less personal. You know, it's very objective. I hadn't thought about it like that.
I think what I really like that. I think it's very interesting. And I think that where it becomes really powerful is then where you link that client journey with the employee journey. So where you've got visibility and understanding of what the client wants, but also that visibility and understanding of what the employee needs to be effective. And you can tie both elements together to provide a learning and coaching experience, which helps you as an organization deliver those. And then that obviously is a big lever for growth. So I think there's a lot that we can certainly build on then. We see a lot with the clients that we work with. It's all about how you can tie the data back within your organization from what you understand about your customer base and what you understand about your employees. So it's a very interesting point, Nikki.
I love that. And Monica, any last words of wisdom you'd like to impart to our listeners?
I think virtual reality training is going to be huge in the next few years. I think there's still, it's not perfect yet, particularly from an accessibility perspective, but I think it will grow, it will develop. And I've actually, I was reading about some examples where virtual reality training was used to train doctors surgeries, orthopedic surgeries, which I think is amazing. I think we will see a lot more of that in the next year.
I love that. And especially when we talk about that generational level, you see kids growing up in that virtual reality world and how they'll then bring that into the workforce when they start as well. I love that idea. So the way that we end all of our podcasts is we ask everybody to give one word as a summary from what they've learned from their conversation today, and then one sentence on why they've chosen that word. So, Rachel, if I go to you first, what's your word of the day from today's podcast?
Well, I'm going to cheat a little bit. I'm going to go for two, I'm afraid. So I'm going to go for personalized micro-learning. That's a bit of a mouthful, because I think it will come down to those in-the-moment learning experiences and being delivered in a way that's engaging for that individual. And the reason I use the word personalized is because I think it's personalized both to the employee who's receiving the learning and coaching, but also to the client at the end who is going to benefit from this more upskilled go-to-market individual. So I think personalized in terms of the client as well as the employee journey.
Monica, do you have a word?
Coaching. I think we will see a lot more line managers embracing coaching to be more effective and more inclusive managers.
Love that. Nikki?
I'll stick with the word I had in the first place, opportunity. Opportunity to do things better, to do things and to make a difference. Opportunity to make a difference.
I love that. And I would say my word of today is continuous, because I think the most important thing is to continually learn, no matter how you do it. It's to keep giving people that feedback and that opportunity to grow. So I'll go with continuous. Thank you very much for coming on today's podcast. It's been really interesting. I think we could have all gone on for a lot longer than we have, but you know, our podcasts are only half an hour, unfortunately. If anyone would like to reach out to any of us after the podcast, do give me a hookup on LinkedIn and I'll make sure that we answer any questions that you have. Thank you.
You've been listening to Seismic Sessions, enabling the financial services industry. Don't forget to like and subscribe to stay up to date with the latest opinions on all things revenue enablement within the financial sector.
Thank you.